from producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo. Thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future. New documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Today on the On Enquirer podcast, we catch up with our guy, Michael Tulip, On Enquirer basketball analyst. We react to Illinois basketball's key road victory, 87-75 at Ohio State, that keeps them on pace with Purdue and Wisconsin. Big week for Wisconsin as they head to Nebraska on Thursday night, the day we're recording this podcast, and then host Purdue, which narrowly escapes Northwestern in an overtime game in West Lafayette. So we'll see if any movement happens this week. We know Purdue, Wisconsin is going to drop one this week. So Illinois needs to continue to keep pace. They do at Ohio State. We'll see if they can do that at home against Nebraska. We preview that game. But we dive into Terrence Shannon and his best game. What can that mean for Illinois moving forward? We talk about Ty Rogers being an offensive weapon that teams have to be concerned about, the impact of that for Illinois. Should we still be concerned about this defense that allowed 1.15 points per possession to Ohio State? And what fixes do we need to see there? What Michael Tulip saw from Dane Danger, Amani Hansberry, and Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn off the bench. And we look ahead to Sunday's game against Nebraska and then a week off as they prepare for a huge matchup against Michigan State moving into next week. We break it all down with Michael Tulip coming up next right here on the Illini Enquirer podcast.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to catch up with our guy, Michael Tulip, here on the Illini Enquirer podcast. As Illinois gets, how many victories? Two victories and a loss to Northwestern since the last time we chatted. It's been a little bit, Mike. We got a lot to talk about, but we're fresh off the win at Ohio State. And I think, obviously, the lasting story of that is not just a road win. Whether it stays a quad one win, we can debate. But Terrence Shannon, he's been back for four games. Illinois goes 3-1 there. It took a really epic performance by Northwestern to even dispatch Illinois, which didn't seem like it played all that well at Northwestern, but played well enough to get an overtime of that one. But Terrence Shannon looked his best at Ohio State. So we're four games into this. What have you thought about the reacclimation, reintegration, whatever you want to call it, and what that performance at Ohio State can mean?
Yeah, I think there was always going to be rust with Terrence. Just because of the way he plays doesn't lend itself to long layoffs. And when you talk about easing a guy back in like him, there's no soft launching Terrence Shannon. I thought there were times in the first three games and at times at Ohio State too, where he kind of looked like he wasn't trying to rock the boat. And that's just not conducive for the way that he plays. His game is predicated on aggression and assertiveness, and it helps everyone else around him when he plays that way. So this game against Ohio State was the first game, in my opinion, where he looked like he finally had his legs under him. I thought he had the most lift on his shot. I thought he had the most ball control in transition, body control in transition. And, you know, like, you had to let him work through those things. Because whatever you envision the ceiling being for this Illinois team, it's the top end of it is with Terrence Shannon. So if it looked ugly for a couple games, you just kind of had to work through that and hope that he figured it out. And I thought he definitely figured some things out against Ohio State.
Yeah, and you still won three of the four games, right? Like, the Indiana game was rough. Like, the Northwestern, there were moments where it could get a little bit rough, but to come out of it with three wins in those four games while he's adjusting. Like, how do you think that sets up? Like, is Ohio State a springboard? Can it be a springboard for Terrence Shannon and the rest of this team?
It should be. I mean, these guys are human, and when you are lacking confidence or you're a little hesitant, like I think Terrence was when he came back, in addition to the conditioning and all that, you see yourself get back to form a little bit. It should reaffirm some things for you where you say, hey, I am that guy. Like, I'm back to trying to be that guy that I was pre-suspension. And that, I think that just, you could tell when he got going, this team just started to gain a collective confidence, right? And that bodes well moving forward for sure.
All right. Has the put the center on Ty Rogers defense, has it failed outside of Purdue? I mean, that was a great performance by Ty against Ohio State. I liked what he was doing against Indiana. I thought he probably should have played a little bit more in that game. There's just an aggressiveness and a confidence out of Ty Rogers that even with Shannon seems to have come back. So has Illinois figured out, has Ty Rogers figured out how to attack that kind of defense?
Yeah, look, I thought he was arguably the player of the game at Ohio State. I mean, you could give it to Terrence, you could give it to DeMass. Both of them were fantastic. But I thought the Ty's effort, his energy, the way he attacked, timely rebounds, putbacks, finishes, like I thought he was outstanding in that game. And he's grown a lot more comfortable with the matchups that he's getting. And honestly, it is 100%, shouldn't say 100%, as I give the fact that it didn't work as well against Purdue. But by and large, it is benefiting Illinois. And, you know, he's finding crevices. He's making himself available and then attacking head up and with back downs when he sees matchups that he likes. And the reason this has actually been a benefit for Illinois is because he's quicker than these bigs. He can put bigs in foul trouble. He's a confrontational driver. We've talked about him being even more of a confrontational driver since his free throws have gone up. His percentages have gone up. Now he's not hesitant at all to go to the line. I think he steps up there with some purpose now, and he steps up there with some confidence. And then, you know, I think if you're going to play off of him like teams do, you're leaving one of the best offensive rebounders in the Big Ten Conference with a free run to the basket. And that's where he's also hurting teams. So – and then on top of that, he's a really good defender.
Well, and then he's providing that screener, right? Like when they're dropping on him, like Terrence got an open three just because he was screened at the top, right?
Yeah, and that was my next point. So the adjustment that the staff made with Ty, they put him at the five. Like they legitimately put him at the five against Ohio State. And we'll show it on the film so you can see the difference between it. But typically when they run that stack action – and it's a very simple action. So it's if it's Terrence Shannon that's receiving the ball screen, him and the five man will be in a stack action at the free throw line. Terrence will pop up to the wing. Everybody that's listening to this has probably seen this in the game. Mm-hmm. Guy enters it, big follows for a ball screen. Before that was Coleman Hawkins, mostly Dane Danger. They ran it a lot last year, and then they run it more when Dane's in compared to Coleman. But the adjustment that the staff made was, let's just put Ty at the five. Let's run stack and put Ty at the five and space Coleman to the corner the way he's shooting the ball. Now you spread the floor out and you get Ty operating in short rolls. Like, I think he's one of their best rollers. Mm-hmm. He's their best playing out of rolls, the way he finishes around the basket. So I thought that was an awesome adjustment. And I think it kind of unlocks Ty, because we actually talked about this before Ty's freshman year. You're like, can you make him a ball screener and play in short roll? Like, 4-on-3 situations and have him make reads because he can pass the ball too. It's a great wrinkle. And who knows, maybe moving forward, teams are like, hey, let's play him a little more honest. Even though he's not a shooter, it you know, we're closer to check out. We're closer to potentially get on him so he's not head full of steam coming at us with downhill. So we'll see if teams now revert back and adjust back. But I'd say on the whole, putting a five on a lot of people panicked after the Purdue game. We talked about it where I thought it was more of a Zach Edey thing.
Yeah.
Where he may be the defensive player of the year in the conference.
I think he is right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And because outside of that, I think Ty Rogers has done a hell of a job. I mentioned him being like the player of the game in the Ohio State game. I thought he had a big part in turning that Indiana game in the first half. Agreed. When things were a little sluggish. So He's been great, man. He's been great these past few weeks.
Yeah, that was the second game of January where, like, uh-oh, they figured out how to stop this offense, and Illinois finishes the month fifth in offensive efficiency in the country. Yeah. Marcus Domask, I don't want to let this performance go into the rear. Like, we've kind of accepted that Marcus Domask is a 20-point, 5-assist guy during Big Ten play. Would he be your transfer of the year if that was the award? If there's a newcomer of the year, is Marcus Domask the guy?
I don't know why they don't have that.
They should
board. Know. I feel like a lot of now with the portal era, I feel like it's even more needed. But he is. I think he would be the transfer of the year, newcomer of the year for me. When you talk about 20 a game and 5 rebounds, like, that is not easy to do for anyone. There's guys that do it sometimes on bad teams, but this is a really good Illinois team, and he helped keep them afloat when Terrence was out, and now Terrence can come back in and get reacclimated, and they're still sitting at 7-3, and they still have everything they want to achieve in front of them, whether it's a Big Ten regular season title or a deep run in March, and he plays a big part in that. I think AJ Storr is another guy that you can definitely look at. He's 18 a game and 5 rebounds and 37% from three. That's pretty much the same Wisconsin team from last year. The only difference is they have AJ Storr now. Yep. And Chucky Hepburn's taken a backseat. A couple guys have taken a backseat because he just is that talented and that good. So I think that would be a kind of a two-horse race, but I'd give the edge to Domask because he's just been, man, he's given them such a variety, and he's been pretty lights out.
Yeah, and like, we could talk about Terrence Shannon being the best player on this team, but like, everything runs through him offensively, Mike. And the way he's been able to handle it and succeed with it at a higher level, like, I just don't want to overlook it because it's been one hell of a year.
And give a lot of credit to Terrence, too, because Terrence has come back, and you could easily have had a kid that is trying to reclaim his All-American status and, no, I'm not giving it to you for you to back down and booty ball. Like, hey, come set a screen for me. Or Terrence is smart enough to understand, and he probably sat at home and watched the games and said, man, even before – he went out, they were going to some booty ball actions, and Domask was super, super efficient in that. And I think Terrence realizes that it benefits him too.
Yep.
If Marcus is doing that. And we talked about it earlier in the year where someone needed to step up to alleviate some of that pressure from Terrence. These guys have done that and some. The growth of Marcus Domask, the growth of Quincy Guerrier, the growth of Coleman Hawkins, the growth of Justin Harmon. I mean, all those guys had played such a big role in helping each other out and helping each other succeed. And that's what makes it fun to watch, because that's the way basketball should be played, man.
As good as this month was offensively, the defense ranked 71st in defensive efficiency, which is not where Brad Underwood wants this to be. And usually teams that make runs in the tournament are better than that defensively. So why has it slipped defensively, and what adjustments do you think can be made there?
I think no Terrence hurt. And now there's been moments when Terrence is coming back. He's fallen asleep a couple times off the ball and whatnot. But what you can do with matchups when he's on the floor, he can guard the other team's best player. And that doesn't put as much strain on Domask to have to do that, or Luke Goody when he comes in the game to have to get switched on guys like that. So, you know, their defense specifically, where I see the biggest step back is in their communication throughout the month of January. I think you get to this point in November and December where you all of a sudden go, man, we're a good defense. We got this figured out. And maybe we're not going to communicate as much, because it feels like it's second nature. It feels like we can kind of do this on autopilot. And all these teams get reminders in January. I mean, UConn last year won the national championship. They lost 6 of 8 at some point in that kind of January stretch where you start to lock back in and be like, okay, let's keep the main thing, what brought us to the dance, and let's get back to that. And I thought they did that against Ohio State. I thought their switching was probably the best that I've seen it, their communication off the ball, the best that I've seen it in this January stretch. And that's encouraging, because again, I've made this point before, but when you're a team that is so versatile defensively, you can't let that be a detriment, because you have all these coverages that you can run. You can switch 1 through 4. You can switch 1 through 5. You can ice on the sideline. You can play drop coverage. They showed like a tad bit of zone from time to time. So there's a lot that you're doing. So you have to, even more so, you have to communicate on every single possession. Subs are coming in. Does that guy know what the coverage is? And then the last point that I'll make is personnel. There's been elements in January where I feel like they haven't been great with personnel. And personnel a lot of times should dictate how much you're helping, how little you're helping, what the switches are. We'll get into Nebraska, but they have shooters. And if you have shooters, you know, it's not just about switching. It's about switching up and taking away the airspace, not letting them sit behind that crevice to shoot threes, and not going under when it's obvious that you're going under, like a couple guys did in the Ohio State game against Jamison Battle. I guess Gary did it one time, or Jamas did it one time against Battle. So, you know, that type of stuff. And a lot of teams get a reminder in January. That's what January is for.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you're starting to get guarded differently. There's more to process because you're in conference play. Now you lock back in. The good teams lock back in. The bad teams wilt and let it fester. So I expect this team, being an older team, to not let that fester.
Well, this is a very small sample size, but Quincy Guerrier, the last couple of games, I just feel like hasn't had that same bite he did during that really great stretch. And then Coleman, obviously the emotion finally got the best of him, and a ref finally teed him up. It felt like this was pretty fortunate for Coleman that this was the first time he got teed up. But anything stick out of those guys? I mean, those guys are allowed off games every once in a while, but anything stand out?
For sure. I mean, off games, no doubt. I think, you know, that Indiana game was really interesting because if I remember correctly, it was Quincy Guerrier that kind of got punked on a blockout by Mbako, and he's able to finish for a layup off a free throw blockout. And, you know, then he comes down. I think he was frustrated. Then he fouled at 40 feet, and Underwood took him out of the game, and that was kind of it.
Yep.
I mean, he kind of got shelved. And, you know, that's the sign of, one, a coach willing to hold his players accountable, but also a sign on this team where it's like, hey, if you're not doing your job and other guys are stepping up and we have talented pieces, you may sit. Now, I do think that Brad Underwood at times, Northwestern's a good example with Ty Rogers. I think the extended shelving at times is not needed. I just think for 20 minutes in that Northwestern game, like, you can't shelf Ty Rogers. Like, get him in by the under 8 media in the second half. Maybe there's a spark. Maybe you recognize something. Hey, this is a change that we can make. Because if you don't put him in, you don't necessarily know. And Quincy, you know, there were other guys that kind of had it rolling in that Indiana game, or at least were more dialed in. And those are the ones that you roll with. And then I expect Quincy to bounce back.
Yeah.
Because, again, older guy, more experienced guy. And then with Coleman, I've texted someone during the Northwestern game. And I said I would be willing to bet money that Coleman Hawkins gets teed up in his next two games. I don't know when it's going to be. You know, it might be the Indiana game. It might be the Ohio State game. But it's going to be one of the two. And it did. And it happened. And I think it's been brewing for a few weeks. And, look, for Coleman, it's just about understanding your importance to this team. And I think he cares deeply, but you just need to understand how to channel that. You're never going to take his fire away. You're just not. That's how guys like that are wired. That's how they play.
Curbelo was the same way, right?
Same way, kind of wear their emotions on their sleeve. And honestly, it's what makes them a good player. Mm-hmm. So it's on the player and it's on the staff at times to kind of reel him in and be like, okay, understand your importance to the team. We don't want to take away the fire that you have or the passion that you play with, but just be more mindful of time and situation and not having momentum-shifting plays like that, because that could have easily turned into an 8-0 run from Ohio State and got them back in the game and got that arena, I guess, somewhat going. Just being more mindful, I think, is top of the list for Coleman Hawkins.
Yeah, we'll get into that Ohio State thing here in a second. But obviously, with those guys struggling, you had Danger come in, and I think had his most impactful game of the year. Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn, Amani come in, and they didn't lose anything. Like, you're sitting there 4 minutes, you know, Hawkins out, Danger out, Shannon out with foul trouble. Two freshmen come in. This could be the turning point of the game, and the lead only expanded. Harmon gets a ton of credit. Domas carried them offensively at that point. But those guys didn't hurt you. So what was most encouraging about the minutes from that depth? Like the depth actually showed up.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's been a shift for a couple of those guys. But I'll start with Dane. Dane comes in there. He played 11 minutes. I don't care about the 7 points. We know Dane can do that. There's no question. The 3 offensive rebounds and some of the defense that he played and his activity, that's got to be the name of the game for Dane Danger.
Activity. I love that word. I love that word for him.
Active, run the floor. It's all those things that aren't – that don't have to do with getting a post-entry touch, backing down, shooting a hook shot. The offensive rebounds, the putback on the fast break. He had a couple blocks. He was – it felt like he was more all over the place in a good way than he has been in the past. So super encouraging, and you hope that he continues to channel that and say, man, this is my role. I may have tried to fight that at times, but if I'm going to come in and make an impact and this team needs me to do that, that's what I got to do. And then for Imani, he plays the same way every time he comes in the game. So you don't really worry about him. He's going to play with energy. He's going to play with effort. He's going to want a rebound. He's going to want a screen. And he's going to really try defensively. Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn, I've also seen a shift with. Because I think this is the moment for freshmen that have 18 points in an opener that start to realize, oh, Big Ten conference play, man, I got to guard, period. If I don't guard, it doesn't matter what I do offensively. And I thought he came in, that 3 was huge against Indiana. Mm-hmm. So that kind of irrational confidence that he has is great because he can come in, and while most guys are maybe timid, he's like, let's go. And that's super helpful. But I thought just the way he's competing defensively, because that's the one thing. If he came in against Ohio State and all he did was make a corner 3 and was just okay defensively, I'm not sure moving into the games upcoming that Brad Underwood's like, man, I feel confident throwing him out there in kind of any situation. He's going to guard like that and compete like that. That's a different story. And for all 3 of those guys. So now it goes from, we're talking 2 weeks ago, man, it's thin for this team. Where's the depth? And if these guys are going to play with keyword desperation, because that's what I saw from those guys in the last 4 minutes of that half, that helps this team a lot.
And if you're Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn and you know Nico Moretti can create for his teammates and things like that, but really can't guard, and Sincere Harris is redshirting, that's your role. Like that is your role, is to come in and be that energy guy. And I did like, Mike, that Imani had confidence on offense. Like to take that corner 3 in rhythm looked good, just a little short. And then to take it off the bounce and get that and one opportunity, that showed me a lot. Like I'm really high on what he can be for the long term. And I've just loved his attitude that even through the back injury, even through not getting a lot of minutes, like that guy comes in and he looks like he can help.
Yeah, I like his demeanor. I like his attitude. I had the good fortune of sitting a couple rows behind the bench for the Indiana game. And you could tell that with Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn at times, you know, I give him a lot of credit because when he comes in, he competes. But there, you can tell that, like, it does bother him, and it should, because he's a competitor, and he came to play. There's no question about that. And I just see Imani just time and time again with his arm around him and pumping him up and stuff, and that's just really cool to see from another freshman who
there's maturity, you know,
could easily be sitting there and kind of thinking about his own situation. But I see him being one of the first guys to jump up on the bench and clap. Like that stuff sounds so not relevant and trivial, but man, I just, for your culture and for just the overall vibe of the team, man, it makes you look and be like, okay, Imani, who's getting limited playing time, is up cheering. Like, what do I have to complain about if I'm Justin Harmon or if I'm Dane Danger and I'm playing more and coming out of the game thinking about my own situation? So this has just been really cool to see from them.
Mike, and I know you always, like, when you're watching film or you're at a game, you watch the bench. Like, so I know to you.
Hard
like,
not to.
Yeah. But I know for you, like, that stuff matters. So coming from a former player, like, that stuff does matter, and it does tell us something a little bit about those guys.
No, I've lived it, and I've seen that when it comes to when, quote-unquote, like, cancer's in the locker room, everybody always thinks about it's the guy that is the ball hog. Or the guy that has a little bit of an attitude on the floor or something. It very often it is like the 9th, 10th, 11th guy on the team because they're unhappy with their role, they're unhappy with their situation, and misery loves company. And those type of guys will try to pull anyone they can with them if their head is not on straight. It's the sixth guy in the rotation who maybe thinks he should be getting starting or should be getting some more shots up when he gets in the game, that guy may go over to and be like, yeah, man, that's crazy. Yeah, coach doesn't know what he's doing. And that's how that locker room frays. It is from the middle to the end and more than it is from the front, which is crazy.
Yeah, would a Gross call it energy vampires?
Yeah. I think it was a John Gordon thing.
Yes.
But
Gross loved that one.
Yeah. No, the energy vampires, that was a no-no in our locker rooms for Gross.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sampfel, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
All right, Sunday, Nebraska, Tominaga, and the Cornhuskers come to town. This is a team that hasn't played well on the road. They play at Wisconsin today. We're recording this on Thursday. So we'll see or they host Wisconsin. So we'll see if they can continue their home. They're 5-0 in Big Ten play. But on the road, they're 0-5 in Big Ten play. But still, Mike, a dangerous team offensively at times. So what are the keys for Illinois against the Cornhuskers?
Yeah, I mean, I think Fred Hoiberg's done a great job. I think that Nebraska administration deserves a lot of credit because they could have easily parted ways with them 2 years ago. And you just don't know like when things are finally going to pop a little bit. And he's gone back to his Iowa State days a little bit where he was just great with transfers. DeAndre Kane he brought in. They were just like he's doing a little bit more of that here in Nebraska. And he got some really good players. Bryce Williams is a guy that I think Illinois was potentially targeting at one point because his ability to stretch the floor and he's got size. He's 6'8". And you know, Mass was also a great pickup. Alec is another guy that comes from New Mexico and was an impact player in the Mountain West. And those guys have really put it together because they're selfless. And that's the thing that sticks out the most when you watch that team. Now, defensively, what Nebraska does and what Illinois can exploit is they always have their quote unquote like low holds, meaning they kind of park a guy underneath the basket. And if there are any baseline drives, they full rotate. Like they will send they'll send that guy full rotate and force you to skip it, force you to hit drift passes and swing the ball around. And we saw against Northwestern earlier in the year where if that's what you want to do, this team is willing to pass it. They can move it around the arc. They can make shots and they can drive long closeouts. So that's got to be the game plan offensively. And then seeking out Tominaga, seeking out Sam Hoiberg and some of these other guys that you feel like you have, good matchups with. But offensively for Nebraska, I mean, they're one of the more combustible teams in the Big Ten. I would honestly put them up there like almost the most from outside the arc. Their last three wins, they've shot over 50% from three. Mm-hmm. Two of those wins against Purdue and Ohio State have been, 14 threes in a game. So whether it's Bryce Williams, Mass hit, I think, 5 or 6 against Ohio State. And then we know with Tominaga, I talked about it earlier in the pod, they do a lot of dribble handoffs. And what shooters do, really good shooters do, Steph Curry does it, J.J. Redick was really good at it, is when teams are switching on dribble handoffs, there is always going to be a crevice in between the dribble handoff where you've been passed off but haven't been fully passed off yet. And guys will sit right behind that handoff and shoot. And that's what Tominaga does. So it's not about switching. It's about switching up. Yeah. Like that's what I'm watching when I'm watching Illinois' defense is how good are you not just with your switches and communicating but switching up, because you're not going to get burned if you run Tominaga off the line and overcommit. That should be the game plan. So that's what I'll be looking for here for this matchup.
And then Illinois, I mean, they needed this kind of break. It's just 4 days, but it's been really, just game after game after game here. But then they get a week off until Michigan State, which is a huge opportunity for Illinois, not only in this Big Ten race, but NCAA tournament. So what does that week off mean for a team that's, had game after game here, Mike?
Well, it's huge because you can finally take a breath and focus on yourself a little bit. Because I think when you get into these 2-day, 3-day preps over and over again, then it's just immediately becomes about the next opponent. Mm-hmm. And who are we playing? What's the scout team, personnel, how are we guarding them? And not, hey, here's our 3 days we have on the front end of this layoff before we start getting into personnel, where maybe we change some things. Maybe we add, you know, this defensive wrinkle, or we add this offensive wrinkle, and we can rep it for a couple days without having to have that impede on the scout or impede on the personnel. So coaches love it because they can break it up in that fashion. But for sure, you needed to survive this stretch, because I think they had a similar stretch last year. And, you know, I don't know what it ended up being, 6 games in 17 days or something crazy like that. So they were able to, for the most part, survive it to this point. I mean, you're 3-1 since Terrence came back. And so now you try to get a little bit more continuity through practices that are focused on yourself, and then you worry about the personnel those next couple of days before Michigan State.
Mike, the hot seat is starting to emerge in the Big Ten. And if you're the AD at Ohio State and Michigan, these are two really good jobs, by the way. Yeah. What is concerning you most about what is happening there?
I mean, what concerns you most is just when your team, and both of them, I think, fall under this category. Neither of them play with any juice.
Yeah.
Like it's and that's reflected in the capacity, or, you know, the attendance at the arena. That's usually a telltale sign. And, you know, I do think there's always elements of like, hey, they don't look like they play for their coach, you know, or their coach lost them. Those two teams don't look like they play for each other.
Right.
And that's the first thing. Cause I've seen teams in the past that, you know, maybe weren't necessarily connected with their coach or whatever, and just kind of put up with it. But they played for each other, and you can still survive that way. So now you can't be defiant, but you have to play hard and play for each other. And I don't see that with those two teams. Now, I do think that something that flies a little bit under the radar for both those teams is, I think out of this, and this is really more off the top of my head, so I'd have to like really look into it. But I think out of all the teams in the Big Ten, the two things that Ohio State and Michigan have in common is that over the last couple of years, they've sent the most guys to the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, let's just take Michigan, for example. You obviously lose Dickinson, but to get a second year of Diabate in Houston, what that potentially could have meant, to get a second year of Jet Howard, to get a third year of Kobe Bufkin. I mean, all four of those guys are not got like those. All four of those guys could be out of the NBA in 5 years.
Yeah.
4 years when their rookie contracts are up. Some of them may stick around, some of them may hang on, but you very easily could have had extra years of those guys. Same goes for Malachi Branham. Same, not as high on Bryce Sensabaugh, because I mean, he was one of the worst defenders in the Big Ten last year, but talented offensively, and maybe in a sophomore year, he starts valuing that more. You know, EJ Liddell leaves a year early. So, you know, that hurts. And like, I don't know if those, I think a change should be made. I think it's just time, and I think both coaches would land on their feet.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. My personal opinion on the Michigan job is just, how good of a job is that?
Because BYU made it look a lot better, right?
I think it's a good job. But relative to how people talk about that job, the amount of like admissions issues, like the how that's impacted transfers. I mean, there are other schools where it's like grad transfer, cool. Like, hey, just finish your stuff in July and come on over. And Michigan just has different parameters. You know, in some ways, they operate like they're a Ivy League type of school. That's shown in the Doug McDaniel suspension. And so I don't know. Ohio State, like if I were to rank both of them, I think Ohio State's a better job. I really do. Now, Michigan may have more tradition,
right,
if you call it that, but things have changed in the last few years. So I'll be really interested to see. I mean, I think Holtman and Howard, to a degree, have been impacted by guys leaving for the NBA and haven't necessarily like hit it out of the park with transfers, and that's hurt them both. So we'll see what happens, but they're definitely not going to be the only, you know, seats that are warm.
Yeah, like, you know, Indiana, I think he's going to get another year unless he decides I'm 65 and I'll head it to Dusty May if they want to get Dusty May in there. But kudos to Ben Johnson, man. Like, the difference between Michigan and Ohio State couldn't be more clear, and I think especially Michigan. Minnesota plays hard. Like, yeah, those guys play for each other, and there's something at least foundationally there where those guys either listen to their coach or they want to play for each other. So I'll give them credit there. I still think I'd want to see more from Minnesota, see him close this out with a winning season. But I never thought he'd get a year four, and at least his team's playing for him.
They play hard. Like, they play with juice.
Yeah.
And now it's amazing you start winning some more games, and games that, you know, in previous years you probably would have lost. So that's just the maturation process there, and Ben Johnson growing has been really cool to see, because I think everybody targeted that role coming into the year as like, okay, well, Minnesota's going to be open. And now it's, you know, he might, depending on how he finishes out this season, he may have bought himself some more time. But I'll just be curious across the whole, you know, what happens at Louisville? Who gets the DePaul job? You know, there's all this buzz at Arkansas.
Have you heard my DePaul guy?
Am I what?
Have you heard my DePaul guy?
I hope it's Will Wade.
Juwan Howard.
That's not a bad idea. I can see that.
If Michigan moves on, I think that's a big name. I think you get dudes there. And being Chicago guy, like, I think in that league you might have some success. You're right. He lost some guys, but I think he can still succeed as a coach. I just think at Michigan, it's past time.
Yeah, yeah. Seeing him at DePaul would be interesting for sure, because I think whoever takes that job, and this is what's so funny, because everybody on the outside can say, why in the world would you want that job?
Yeah.
But that's just not how these coaches are wired, man.
You make $3-4 million a year, and you're going to be an assistant in the NBA. He's probably not.
If you have a speck of success at DePaul, you're like Red Auerbach.
Right.
So, like, that's why I look at – like, I'm personally rooting for Will Wade, because I truly think – he is just the type of guy – he has McNeese State, like, 20-2 right now.
Right.
McNeese
State. There's no question he's a good coach.
Like, no, yeah, and he will – find a way to get guys.
Sure will.
Especially in this era, it's probably a little bit more conducive to you know, the way a Will Wade operates. But yeah, I don't know. And then just people love the portal. I am more of a carousel guy. I love the coaching carousel.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna have plenty.
The dominoes will start falling here in a couple months.
Yeah, we'll have plenty to talk about. We're doing like a pre-podcast segment about the All Big Ten team next week. Let's do that, Mike. Let's come up with our 15 guys in the All Big Ten team, because it is a difficult decision, and I do think it sets up well for Illinois guys, but we'll get into that next week. Appreciate the time as always, Mike.
Appreciate it, man.
Great stuff as always from Michael Tulip. Check out his film room. We just broke down, and he really illustrated well how Ty Rogers is putting pressure on defenses now, that the Zach Edey defense has kind of been an outlier so far, and what he did against Ohio State. We also dive into some defense that was a little bit of an improvement from the previous week. So as always, if you're not a VIP member, just $1 for your first month. I keep telling you, Michael Tulip and Jay Lim's film rooms are worth the price of admission alone. And then on top of that, you get Derek Piper's analysis, you get all our reporting from everywhere we go, and plenty of recruiting breakdowns. And we've had a busy week with Illinois football recruiting. We'll see what they do with these open assistant coach positions, but we've had plenty of insight on the newest additions to the Illini class of 2025 throughout the week here at Illini Inquirer, and who could be next. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcasts. If you check us out on YouTube, hit that like button, subscribe to us, hit the notifications bell. That helps us out as well. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Hey. was a very bright, shining light, Sarajevo, and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.